This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss.
Good morning, I'm Sharitz Abdullah and you've tuned in to the Breakfast Grill. Axiata Digital Service is the digital service arm of Axiata Group Berhad. Their business focus is to create a digital lifestyle primarily for Axiata customers. Now, one of their notable brands is the Boost e-wallet, which has 3.3 million registered users and provides cashless payment and a loyalty reward service for its users. So up until 2018, Axiata has invested over $200 million on their internet and digital services with the hope that they can create the next unicorn for the Axiata Group. So joining me this morning is Khairil Abdullah, the CEO of Axiata Digital Service, where he leads investments and operations in digital businesses. So prior to his role, Khairil was also the Group Chief Marketing and Operation Officer of the Axiata Group, and a role he assumed upon joining Axiata in 2012. Khairil, thanks for joining us on The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you very much.
Let's start off with an overview of what Axiata Digital Service is all about. So ADS, if I may call it, is one of the three key operating companies of the Axiata Group Berhad, and your group CEO was quoted in the Edge interview as saying that the group's digital ventures are its most misunderstood business. So why do you think he said that?
Well, I think people understand telco, right? You pick up the phone, you dial a number, you send a message, you look through your apps. People do understand what the whole purpose of a telco business is for. I think in the business of a digital adjacency for a telco, it is often sort of misunderstood what the purpose of that would be. I think for us, we had from day one a very clear mandate, which is two-pronged. Number one was to create digital adjacencies that would actually help the core business revenue. You know, anything to do to address churn, reduce churn, increase our average revenue per user, or increase acquisition of digital customers. I think that was one thing that we were looking for by creating that. The second pillar was actually, because we're a telco, we're sitting on a ton of assets. And I can describe a little more on these assets in a short while, but this would mean things like retail points, right? And our purpose was to create digital businesses that would actually leverage on those assets and then create new sources of value for the group.
Okay, so perhaps now that we do have an understanding of what is it that ADS does, perhaps it's good for us to dive into your financial performance. So Axiata Digital has been making losses for several years now. You have said it'll turn into profit by 2021. Could you explain to us what would swing the company to profitability?
Sure. So I think the initial years, I think you mentioned that we started off our journey in 2013. I came on board on 2014. If you like, a lot of the losses are deemed from the expenditures that we have to actually build these businesses, right? So, you know, unfortunately, we cannot capitalize all of them. It's unlike building a telco tower where you actually deem that as CapEx. But in this case, it's OpEx, right? And we have to spend money to kind of build these businesses, incubate these businesses. So we incurred, obviously, sort of a lot of expenses around that. In the initial years, we actually went pretty broad. We experimented with a whole different variety of verticals. To date now, we've actually decided to focus on three main verticals: financial services, like we talked about, the API gateway, number two, and then number three is our ad tech business.
And actually, that's the advertising.
Advertising business. And actually, we now know for each one of these businesses, the unit economics business model and how to actually drive profitability from each one of them. So just to give an example, the ad tech business, at the back end of last year, quarter four, was already generating profit. So this is the first year that we expect for a full year that they're actually going to be profitable. The API gateway, because we're still expanding very aggressively, 2019 will not be profitable, but 2020 will be profitable.
Maybe we can recap. Could you clarify again whether the profit in quarter four 2018 result translate to a profit after tax for 2018?
No, not for 20. So in a consolidated basis for all of Axiata Digital, we're not going to see profit for 2018 and probably not for 2019 as well because of the level of investments that we'll continue to make.
Looking at your past results, your loss margin is getting bigger. So how will the 2018 result look like?
Well, so the result for this year, I guess there are two sort of components to it, right? So one is the ongoing performance of these three businesses. They will continue to generate a loss. Yes, the advertising business will be profitable, but on a consolidated Axiata Digital basis, those two other businesses are still loss-making. Now, there's another component, which is that, as I said before, in the past, we've actually experimented with a variety of different companies, right? And actually, we've just transferred these companies to a fund manager. It's now going to be professionally managed by a GP based out of Singapore. It's a, if you like, it's a VC fund. In that transfer of assets to this fund, we're actually booking a profit for the group, right? So actually, when you look at that profit versus the loss that we're going to incur for this year, so on a net-net basis, we are actually going to be profitable. But of course, that profit that I just talked about is a one-off, right? It's based on, you know, the years of building up these businesses and now actually kind of transferring it to a fund.
I'm sorry, but let me try to understand this better. Can I know, out of the three main businesses, which is the least profitable?
Oh, so the one that is actually, well, they're all performing well depending on what metric you're looking at. Okay. If you're looking at purely on a PAT basis or a profit after tax basis, you know, obviously the financial services business is burning quite a bit of cash, obviously because we're trying to grow the consumer base, we're trying to grow the merchant base, we're trying to grow new lines of businesses. And because of that, we're actually investing a whole lot into it. And therefore, from a profit after tax basis, that one is probably burning the most amount of money.
Your target is just 2 years away, and with all that has been said, what strategy have you put in place for this trend to reverse?
So I don't think I need to talk about the ad tech business because it's already profitable. I think for the API gateway business, I mean, as I said before, a lot of the losses were because of the investments required to build the number of northbound merchants, or what we call digital companies, and the southbound connections, the telcos that were connected to. So now all we need to do now is sort of to scale it up, because the unit economics is already positive, right? The business model unit economics is already positive. The most tricky one, of course, is the financial services business, right? And I think I've said it in different forums before that the payment business, i.e. what Boost in Malaysia is now known for, that is in general not a very profitable business, and we don't expect it to be. But for us, it's actually a means to an end. As an example, in an adjacent company that we've now created to support the Boost business, we've launched microlending. And these are loans, very small ticket size. So our average ticket size of our loans right now is 3,500 ringgit. These are for tier 3, tier 4 merchants, right? These are for the owners of Pasar Malam stores, your makcik nasi lemaks and so on and so forth, that cannot get a loan from a bank. Those businesses are actually very profitable for us. So by doing the payment business, we're actually able to collect a lot of information about the transactions that go through the merchants, and we can use that information to then credit score the merchant on whether this merchant is credit worthy, and therefore we will then decide on whether to not to give this merchant a loan. That lending business is very profitable.
You mentioned that your money lending business is profitable. Now, is that an estimation, or is it already profitable?
So every single loan that we dish out, right? So we actually launched our MVP, our most viable product, on a lending business in July last year. It was actually, it was the second week of Ramadan, because we noticed that actually a lot of our merchants are Muslim merchants. And of course, during Shawwal, they need the cash. But a lot of the money is tied up in working capital, right? So we actually introduced a Shara-compliant micro-lending product. It was very, very successful. Every single loan that we dished out was actually profitable for us, because we were able to use our engines to ensure that NPLs were very low. In fact, actually, NPLs right now, non-performing loans, is zero for us, right? Because our scoring engines are pretty robust. So we actually collect on all our loans. We charge, we don't charge exorbitant interest rates. We charge interest rates that are actually very competitive in the market, and we collect on them, right? And so every single loan that we dish out is profitable. We now have 75,000 merchants on the Boost platform. It should probably go to about 200,000 at the end of the year. From that, a subset of that, we will want to give out these micro loans too, right? And if we make money on that subset, that's great business for us. And it will cover the losses that we are currently incurring on the payment side.
Well, okay, that's interesting. So maybe one more question on your financial performance. Mm-hmm. So Axiata Group Berhad, you've given yourself another 3 more years until 2022 to sort of build up your own unicorn. We're talking about 1 billion startup company.
Correct.
Out of your three businesses, where is this unicorn going to come from?
Actually, we expect each and every one of the three businesses to become a unicorn on its own right. Just to give you an example, we actually closed a funding round with the AgTech business last year, and that already established by the way, when we say unicorn, it's actually a US dollar, US $1 billion, sure, not right. Ringgit point. Okay. Yeah. In our AgTech business, we actually closed a funding round last year, and at that stage, it was already valued at $150 million. Now, since then, the business has grown, has doubled in size, and it is expected to double in size again this year. And so we don't see that for them, a path to $1 billion is not impossible at all. But if I look at the other two businesses, they're also on a similar trajectory as well. Something that we've already closed, and maybe this is sort of disclosing to you guys for the first time, we've actually closed a funding round that there is actually now an external investor into Axiata Digital that will be announced very, very shortly. And in that announcement, we will also sort of describe kind of what the valuation of Axiata Digital as a whole is. And it's tracking very, very nicely towards the creation of unicorns.
Brilliant. Okay. So joining us on The Breakfast Grill this morning is Khairil Abdullah, CEO of Axiata Digital Services. We'll continue in the next part by asking Khairil how Boost have performed. Stay tuned on BFM 89.9. You've tuned into BFM 89.9. On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Khairil Abdullah, CEO of Axiata Digital Services. So earlier we spoke a lot about your financial performance, and a lot of it hinges on the different businesses that you have, and some of them probably a business that will complement other businesses as well. So let's focus on Boost. What are your target number for merchants this year? You mentioned earlier that you have a target of 100,000, but last year you fell short by 30,000 merchants. So what would make it better this time?
Well, I think what we were looking for was sort of quality merchants as well. I think one of the things, because we were very early in the game of e-wallets, we found that actually not all merchants were ready for accepting this kind of payment, right? And especially in the early parts of the year when we went out and we acquired the merchants, we found very, very little transactions coming from them. And there was a lot of ongoing communication, ongoing education with them. Now we actually use a lot of data science in trying to figure out, you know, kind of who we go after and the kind of profiles of merchants that we go after, right? So we're a lot more selective on how we build and how we expand our merchant base.
Earlier, you spoke passionately about serving the underserved. Would putting more restriction make your service sort of less inclusive?
Well, actually, it's twofold, right? One is, so in the past, we might go to a kind of a region, a geographic region, a little township, et cetera, that actually we didn't have the consumer base there. And then we'd go out there and we would recruit the merchants. And obviously, the merchants will see zero transactions because no one in the vicinity actually carried a Boost wallet, right? So today, we're a little bit more selective in the sense that we'll go out to, yes, it's still the Pasar Malams, yes, it's still the Bazaar Ramadans and so on and so forth, but it would probably be tied to where our consumer bases are, right? And our consumer bases right now, actually, it's expanding, it's growing, it's no longer focused on urban centers, but we would follow where the consumers are such that we do actually allow the merchants to enjoy a little bit of kind of the pleasures of actually expanding and allowing e-wallets to sort of come into their base.
So the question is Boost in the position to pick and choose? I mean, there's stiff competition out there, especially with big players like GrabPay and WeChat Pay. Wouldn't you benefit from expanding access overall?
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously being the earliest sort of aggressive player around, we've learned a lot, right? So in the initial days, and I'll go back to kind of say around Chinese New Year's last year, we went, you know, sort of you know, spray and pray, if you can call it that, right? So sort of almost a carpet bombing approach to basically trying to grab whatever merchants, grab whatever consumers you can. That proved to be very, very expensive and actually very not very efficient way of actually building the business at all. And so now we actually apply a lot of data science into how we acquire merchants, how we acquire consumers, right? So, for instance, you know, because we within the Axiata Digital family, we run, you know, one of the largest ad tech companies in the region. Sitting behind that ad tech company is actually a very large DMP, a data management platform, which actually houses, for instance, in Malaysia, 18 million smartphone profiles. So we actually know, we have good information about 18 million, you know, sort of users in Malaysia. I believe the smartphone penetration in Malaysia is right now about 20 million. So 18 million is actually a very high percentage. And from there, we actually understand who would probably be the most likely users of smartphones. And then we go out and we target them, right? And that actually has helped us build the base quite aggressively.
Okay. Perhaps we can move on to the question of your competitors and the number of operators up. And there has been talk about possible consolidation. Mm. Is Boost looking into consolidating itself with other operators out there?
Yeah. So maybe I'll start with describing my view of, or at least our view of what the market landscape is going to look like in about 3 years, right? In about 3 years, I think there are going to be three, maximum five large players. And then there'll be a number of niche players, right? And then these niche players could kind of have very close ecosystems around either e-commerce, specific use case like, you know, sort of petrol, et cetera, right? But there'll be three, maybe five large players. Obviously, we intend to be one of them. And if the path to becoming one of the three to five large players requires consolidation, we will absolutely participate in the consolidation.
Do you have a partner in mind?
We have a few, and we're having discussions with some of the partners right now.
Okay, and who are they?
Oh, I cannot disclose it to you for sure.
All right. So basically right now, if you look at the numbers, GrabPay and WeChat Pay both are competitors of yours who have significant advantage in being directly able to access their massive customer base. Now, with 3.6 million... how do you plan to make up the numbers?
Yeah, so you mentioned 3.6. I think that's a little bit of a dated number. As of end of March, we are at 3.8 million right now. We will probably cross 4 million before the end of this month. So in that sense, then it's actually growing and growing very rapidly. Oh, what's our strategy for acquiring customers? Well, two things, right? One is, let's not forget that actually this is a sister company to Celcom. You know, Celcom has, you know, 10 million subscribers within their portfolio. And if you add the MVNOs that sit within the Telkom Celcom network, there's also a very large base as well. Plus, as I mentioned before, we're actually sitting on a DMP which has 18 million profiles in Malaysia that allows us to kind of go out and acquire, right? So even for, I don't know, if you take someone like, say, Touch and Go, you didn't mention their name yet, but I'll mention.
Okay.
You know, I'll give Nizam some
advertising. Is Touch and Go one of your
We consider them, Touch and Go eWallet is one of our competitors. And you know, obviously, they have a large base of card-based users, right? You know, obviously, the guys that are going through the tolls and whatnot. A large proportion of those customers are not registered. And they probably, a large proportion of those customers probably sit within a profile where we would consider not high in the propensity to use eWallet from the get-go. If we plot out the S-curve of the different types of consumers, and we have, by the way, we know who are the early adopters. We know which segments are kind of the later adopters, if you like, right? Sort of, and we're now targeting all the early adopters. And we're mining, if you like, the 18 million profiles that we have to find those early adopters. And that's why we've been growing as rapidly as we've grown.
Okay. GrabPay and WeChat Pay, they have a very strong database. And at the same time, they have strong financial backing. So I'm referring to SoftBank as well as Tencent. Now, with the current economic climate, do you think that you will be able to compete at the investment level?
Well, so as I said before, I think you know, I cannot disclose partners and whatnot yet until probably the 2nd of May. But we have actually secured funding, a fairly sizable amount of funding for the Axiata Digital businesses. Number one. Number two, of course, you know, we have commitment from the Axiata Group to continue to fund these businesses, right? So obviously, in the past, there were other businesses within the Axiata Digital portfolio. We've now pulled out from those businesses because those businesses we realized didn't have the right to win. These three are the ones that actually the group is now. The board within the group is now very convinced that these are the ones that actually will not only kind of be new sources of value for the group as a whole, but also actually adding value to the telco operations, right? And because of that, there's a commitment to continue to fund this business. So coupled with the fact that we are actually able to source funds from external parties, which we have, and the fact that the group continues to be committed to fund the business, I think we're in pretty good shape. The thing I would also add is, you know, and I'm you know, I talk fairly frequently to my competitors, right? And one of the things I learned, you know, from having conversations with the folks like Grab or some of the other players is that, you know, obviously, yes, they do have SoftBank funding. But when you think about the various markets that they're in, they have to take that funding and spread it spread across quite a number of different business lines and quite a number of different geographies as well. The one geography that's obviously sucking up a lot of cash for this business is Indonesia, right? Because they're in a neck-to-neck battle with Gojek in Indonesia. And guess what? Gojek is continuing to get a lot of funding. Guess from who? Right? From the Tencent Group, right? And so in that sense, then, it is in that sense, then, if I think about kind of Malaysia Boost wallet, you know, I don't want to be complacent about it, but I think that there is sort of definitely room for us to kind of use the funding that we have to continue to maintain our leadership position.
Okay. Perhaps maybe one of the things that you're known for is for your cashback reward scheme. Could you tell us how much this is costing your business annually?
I don't have a figure on the top of my head. It is a sizable proportion. But again, as I said before, I think we're doing it in a very smart way versus how we used to do it 12 months ago. And actually, our, what do you call it? Our GTV, we track something called GTV, gross transaction value. Our GTV per discretionary OPEX, which is our spending on things like cashback, has gone significantly. It's basically doubling every month or so. And so in that sense, then actually the spending on the cashback has become a lot more efficient than it was before, right? So it's no longer costing us as much as before.
Okay, but is this strategy or this scheme, is it sustainable?
I think so, because I think there will come a time when actually the cashback is not 100% funded by the wallet, right? In the sense that it will, might be also funded by the partner, the vendor, the branded merchant that we're working with, right? So and we're already starting to see that, right? So some of the merchants, recognizing the large base that we have, they want to be able to sort of tap into our base, and so they'll co-fund some of these cashback campaigns with us, right? So it's no longer on our shoulders to fund everything.
I guess the concern is that if we use, for example, the example of Grab and Uber, once upon a time when they were both competing with each other, they were out there, they were giving a lot of discounts, a lot of subsidy, they were subsidizing a lot of the trips, but once they've consolidated,
they took that away,
took over, they stopped doing it. So I guess, is this your way of trying to grab a hold of as much customers as possible, and then later on, is this something that you're going to take back?
Well, I think if you think about it, so we will continue to try to ensure that there is a large volume of transactions from our customers to our merchants, because as I mentioned before, actually our path of monetization is actually through our merchants and through all the transactions that we might, through all the financial services that we might actually sell to our merchants, right? So in that sense, then we're okay to kind of continue to fund these sort of cashbacks and whatnot, in such that we actually do get the transactions on the merchant side, right? So in that sense, then I don't see us stopping that anytime soon.
Maybe one more question before we sign off. You mentioned earlier that you have exceeded the 3.6 million subscribers.
Probably going to hit 4 million in the next couple of weeks, yeah.
Now, what will be your sweet spot number of subscriber before Boost can perhaps be profitable?
Well, so we're targeting for the end of this year 5 million, but actually more importantly for us is we want a very active base, right? So right now, at any given point in time, we have 10 to 15% of our base, which is sort of very active on a weekly basis. We want to be able to amp up that number very, very considerably, such that actually everybody we sign up from the get-go is actually using it, right? But having said that, when you think about it, you know, wallets as a payment scheme within all of Malaysia is still just, we're just scratching the surface. We're just so far away from, you know, kind of full potential, if you like, right? So in a sense, you know, what I would want to envision is basically within the kind of the next 2 years or so, that actually our base will be around sort of the 10 million mark. And then our active base within that 10 million mark at any given point in time is actually 25 to 50%, right? And in that sense, then, you know, we will probably be looking at a very nice business, right? Now, you touch upon sort of break-even, and I do kind of want to separate out the break-even within the payments business and the other financial businesses, sure. Right? So what do you call it? At that scale of the payments business, that payments business will break even, because actually, you know, given the money that we earn on a net revenue basis, right, and the kind of OPEX that we're spending, when you're looking at a 10 million base, you know, definitely going to be profitable.
Brilliant. So, Khairil, all the best to you, and thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill. That was Khairil Abdullah, CEO of Axiata Digital Services. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Sharitz Abdullah for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.